Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe, and welcome to the latest Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. Fresh off the opening game of the season against Championship rivals Birmingham at St Andrews. We've got a big show ahead for you, ladies and gentlemen, as we start this Monday. We've got transfers, talk about Birmingham, and look ahead to a cup game. I'm joined by two fine gentlemen, and Alex Jones and Stuart Watson. Heathie's had a lie down, as he normally does when I host this, because the Birmingham game was feisty, wasn't it? But AJ, my friend, come in. You've got a big job to start the podcast, so we've got a new sponsor, and I need to apologise to the listeners and the viewers for the last episode, because we had some glitches of the audio for the last 20 minutes of the preview podcast. So sorry about that. But Alex Jones, we've got a new sponsor and you've got a promo to read out. How are you? And go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really good. Welcome everyone to the Kings of Anglia podcast, and welcome to the Kings of Anglia podcast team, Molecular. Really glad to have them on board. They manufacture cleaning products for automotive, agricultural, commercial industries, family-run business. They've been working for 40 years in operation. Really high standard on all the products, work closely with customers to make sure that not only do they get the best products, but also the service that you can rely on. So go check them out, www.molecular-uk.com. We'll have the link where you can purchase your product online, find out more information. And of course, as part of this, we've got a discount code. Use the promo code KOA10, 10% off all products. Put it into the coupon section at the checkout point. Welcome, Molecular. We're really delighted to have you on board.
Indeed. And one day I'll be able to use that code to do my car. But as it still stands, yeah, I still don't drive. But Stuart Watson, my friend, we've also got some good news, because I haven't just got one sponsor. We've got two sponsors. Stardust Spirits have renewed. Good old Gary and the team are still here, my friend. How are you? And yeah, code KOA at checkout.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. First of all, there's a reason, Ross, that you threw to Alex to give our new friends Molecular the promo, because you are struggling with that, aren't you? Azor Matasiwa, you've nailed that. Molecular, go on, just for the listeners, give it a go once now.
All right, Molecular? No.
We'll work on it. But thank you, Molecular, correct. And also, fake news last time out. Mark Heath suggested the Stardust Spirits might be on their way out. They're not. They remain. We have dual sponsors now, and we're delighted that Stardust Spirits stay with us. You know the score by now. They do lots of nice spirits and concoctions that that Gary's come up with himself, some award-winning ones. Alex has mentioned the Biscoff a few different times, but go and have a little look at their wares and see if that interests you.
Definitely. And they're both local companies as well, Suffolk based. So that's great as well. We would like to support local businesses in the area. And of course, Ipswich Town kicked off their championship campaign, boys. Before we get into the Birmingham game, a lot of transfer talk, because there was signing, sexy stuff happened. Jens Huestay returns, and the saga that was Chuba Akpom is officially signed as well. Of course, both of them loan deals. I want to go over to you, AJ, first of all. Jens Huestay, which was his own little saga during this summer. He does a return on loan for Napoli. How happy are you to see the Swedish midfielder return?
Loving your pronunciation of this, Ross. Jens, can you stay? Jens, can you staying at Ipswich? Absolutely. Welcome back. Really good, this. Yeah, this has been a proper saga, hasn't it? It's been on, it's been off. It was on again, it was off again. We've had a couple of these, of course, and this one is the one that Ipswich fans have wanted. And I think the club have made no secrets about wanting to bring Jens Kyusta back. But as Kieran McKenna said a few times at the end of last season, as much as they want to do it, it's a really difficult deal because of the level he was playing at. The ultimate caveat was going to be things like his fitness and his injury record. But Ipswich know the player well and know what he can bring. So there was always going to be that interest there, and there was always going to be interest from elsewhere. Off the top of my head, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, Besiktas, that one looked really close and didn't end up happening. Udinese, I'm sure there are more that I'm missing out. There were quite a few football clubs interested in taking Jens Kyusta this summer. None of them have happened. It's Ipswich Town is coming back and playing in the Championship, and excited because given that he was probably people's second pick for player of the season in the Premier League last year. You're bringing him down a division into the Championship. He should be way above the standard in terms of the quality that he brings. So, yeah, obviously the concern potentially about the fitness, about the injury record, but looking at the loan with the obligation, if Ipswich are promoted to the Premier League, looking at the figures behind that one as well. This one obviously comes after kind of the Hayden Hackney, again, saga a little bit of the Willy Won'ty situation there. That looks like he's not going to happen, and he's turned down Ipswich. Ipswich have gone to Jens Kuster instead. And I think that we can all be pretty happy to get that deal over the line and to bring him home.
There's a reason. Sorry, Ross. Yeah, there's a reason Ipswich have got him as a Championship club, and that is because of the well-publicised sort of injury situation that Jens has with his knees. We know that Brentford pulled the plug on his medical last summer and Ipswich swooped. We know it took Ipswich a little while to get him fully robust. If you look back, he didn't complete 90 minutes until fairly deep into the season. It took him a while to be able to play back-to-back games, but Ipswich did get him there in the latter stages of the season, and he's probably one of very few players that got better as the season went on in that difficult second half of the season. I think we're almost in sort of Ledley King territory. We're kind of wheeling him out to play and not doing a lot of training during the week. But Ipswich will know, you know, he's coming to a club where Ipswich kind of know how to manage him physically. I'd be surprised if he's going to suddenly rattle out 40 plus starts this season. I imagine there'll be a fair bit of rotation with him and picking and choosing when he plays. But from what we've seen of him in the Premier League, he should be a very good player at Championship level. I'm intrigued to see in a different style of football, because Ipswich were the underdogs under the Kosh, didn't have as much of a lot of the ball in the Premier League. It's hopefully going to flip around. Wasn't the case on the opening day, and we'll come on to that, but Ipswich are going to have a lot of games where they're going to have a lot of the ball and facing low blocks, and I want to see a bit more of the attacking side of Jens Kuster's game. He's someone who can carry the ball. We know he's got a worldie in his locker. We saw that with his goal of the season contender against Nottingham Forest. I want to see a bit more of him being that sort of box-to-box player. But his ability on the ball, we've seen is silky smooth, is clear to see. He likes a tackle. When he arrived, he talked about liking a good old-fashioned British challenge, and that will suit him in the Championship. So, yeah, I think we liked what we saw of Jens Kuster, and hopefully we're going to like even more of what we see in the Championship.
Definitely. You say never fall in love with a lone player. We did that last season. We're probably going to do it all over again, this time in the Championship, and one day permanent signing. Obviously, that is available if Town do what they want to do and, of course, get promoted. He's also reunited with Azor Matasiwa now that. So I'm looking forward to them having that partnership in the midfield. And, yeah, I don't know if you guys have really watched it or not, but I'm sure Town fans have. The behind the scenes the club did with Jens when he signed, basically they followed him from the airport to all the other bits and bobs. It's a really good thing on Town TV, so check that out if you haven't already. It's just a nice little insight on Jens, his sort of day, medicals, media, contracts, all that sort of stuff. And he still had his keys for his apartment. He still had that apartment there. So he always, maybe in the back of his mind, he thought he was going to be coming back to Suffolk. Yeah.
I think right up until fairly recently, another club that Alex didn't mention was Burnley. Burnley, of course, who've signed Axel Tuanzebe. I think they were one that was sniffing up until pretty recently as well. So obviously the Hackney situation has been one of the plates that has been spinning for Ipswich Town. Kieran McKenna said, as AJ said, wants him back, but probably a lot of work to do. Yeah, it's good to see him back.
Indeed. AJ, we love a saga, don't we, Ipswich Town? Definitely summer windows. I'm sure Mark Ashton, Kieran McKenna doesn't like that, but it's sadly become sagas with some of these signings. Because Tube Akpom, my friend, is the latest signing. Got announced Sunday evening, the sixth summer signing on loan from Ajax. So another player from abroad, but obviously Tube Akpom is very known from, you know, Championship. Last time he played in this division, he scored 28 goals, the golden boot for Middlesbrough in the 2022-23 season. Thoughts on this signing? Because, yeah, obviously Town hijacked him from Birmingham.
Yeah, so Ipswich Town now have the top scorer in the Championship from the 2022-23 season, as you mentioned, and the 2023-24 season in Sammy Smodics. Two kind of similar players in a way in terms of the positions that they've kind of played in those seasons as well and in those second striker roles. But my understanding is that Chuba Akpom's been signed to be part of the striker unit, and that's where he's played a fair bit of his minutes in the last kind of few seasons in Ajax, Lille as well. But he has that versatility there, and that will be the appeal for Ipswich. And it was not an easy deal, again, to get over the line. I think this one started out with interest from Borough, his former club, and Birmingham. And Birmingham had agreed the deal with Ajax to get it done, was set for a medical. And then, all of a sudden, the bombshell, Ipswich are looking to hijack it. They go to Ajax, they say, right, we're going to match the bid. Do that, player has a decision, player chooses Ipswich. Great, should now be really easy. Wrong, because it's never easy. They do all of that, and then Birmingham go back to Ajax and say, we really want him though, and we're willing to pay up front for the money and take him on a permanent deal. Now Ajax want to sell, they've decided that Akpom's not in their plans. And the player kind of digs his heels in a little bit because he's got his heart set on the move to Ipswich, or on the plan that Kieran McKenna sold. And Ajax, in the end, are happy to sign off a deal that will take him to Portman Road for the season. That one got announced last night at 9 o'clock. Really enjoyed that. Thank you, Ipswich. Love those late ones over the weekend. And yeah, he'll have next season at Ipswich. If Ipswich are promoted, it will be an obligation to buy. I know it's kind of been spoken about. Is it an option? And Ajax put in their report it was an option. It is, as we understand it, an obligation. I believe that's in the region of £7 million if promoted to the Premier League. So definitely some more firepower, some more depth, as has been really needed in the final third, and someone that also brings a real Championship pedigree as well.
Still, I'm just quickly looking at last year's Championship top goal scorer to see if we could make it a triple. But obviously that is Leeds, Joao Peru. So I've completely butchered that, I'm sure I have. He's probably out of sight.
Just Joel, I think we're going for with Peru, aren't we? We're not going to be signing him, but two will do for now. Intrigued to see where he sort of slots into this team. He's as you say, his best work for Middlesbrough came as a second striker. You can play that number 10 role in different ways, can't you? As a link man, as a playmaker. And Alex is right. I think he's probably closest to Sammy Smodics in terms of being a second striker. Clearly a goal scorer. Decent in the air if you look at his highlights reel. But there is some versatility there as well. And he has played sort of wide at different times in his career, on the right at different times. I just wonder, with the shortage of options there at the moment, Chiwagbene, surprise starter for me on Friday, given how long he was out and given the sort of smattering of minutes in pre-season, to chuck him straight in. And I think he looked, you know, like a player that is still kind of building himself back up in that game. If Amari goes, Wes Burns is still a little way off. I wonder if in the short term, Ipswich might consider playing him in that role to start with a kind of longer term view to him being someone that's a really good rotation / tapping option for George Hurst up front.
Yeah, I'm liking this signing, and I'm sure he's ready to go, Chuba Akpom, to see he can sort of prove he's not a one season wonder in the Championship. He's now going to be joining a team who are going to be, you know, fighting for promotion. Stu, you put a great post out yesterday, and well, just basically outlining that there's 29 senior players at Ipswich Town right now. So they're going to have to cut that down. There's been links of departures. Should we just talk about the latest? Leif Davis is the current one because he's been linked to Town rejecting bids and all that. Keep up to date on what's going on with Leif.
Some fairly vague national reports around Leif Davis the last few days. Originally, it was just that Ipswich had rejected bids from unnamed Premier League clubs this summer. Then a report over the weekend, Saturday, I think it was, Saturday morning, that Nottingham Forest were a club preparing to bid for a player. Not quite sure how those sort of stories end up in the media, that a club is readying a bid. Maybe that's, I don't know if that comes from the the Nottingham Forest end, from the player's agent end, just to get something out there and to get a feel for what the response is. But I'd be shocked if Ipswich Town let Leif Davis go, given the left-back situation at the moment. Connor Townsend, who we all felt was a very, very able deputy to Leif Davis, certainly well-proven at championship level, does his ACL in the final warm-up game of the summer over in France. There are other players in the squad that can play that left-back role. Ashley Young, Cameron Humphreys, Jacob Greaves we saw at left-back in the back end of last season, but none of that is ideal. Given the turnover of players has been higher than Mark Ashton and Kieran McKenna would have liked this summer, I'd be very surprised if Ipswich sold. He's a protected asset. He signed a new contract midway through last season. Unless Leif Davis really throws his toys out the pram and pushes for it, which I can't see, and someone puts up serious money that's too good to refuse, which again, I can't see. I can't see this one happening.
Mm-hmm. AJ, famous last words. Yeah, famous last words. How much is Leif Davis worth? This is a debate that's been sort of on social media. And yeah, is there a fee that Town go, that's a lot? But he's obviously just signed a new contract and he is a first team, you know, starter every week.
Wow, that really is on the spot, isn't it?
Well, if Amari Hutchinson is 35 million and he's a forward player and he's younger, it has to dip below that for a start for a left back, doesn't it? What do you reckon?
I think you have to factor in that Amari is probably an easier player to replace, especially in the short term, and Ipswich have been doing that. The fact that Davis has been a very consistent performer over a long period of time and the new contract, all things considered, and well, of course, that we're expecting that Amari is going to be quite keen on the move, if not pushing for the move. Leif Davis, not as much. So when you're looking at the figures there, I'd go 30, I think, would be the number that would start to make me think, actually, you know what, can you get a really top-end championship left back in and then have a lot of funds left over to strengthen and to be in a good FFP, PSR situation? If a team came to the table with 30 million, maybe that would be the number, but I could also see Town really digging their heels in a bit more.
I'd say his market value is probably nearer 20 plus, and I don't think that's enough to want Ipswich to sell, given their current position.
All right, then. Well, watch the space. But obviously, Leif Davis did start at Birmingham, which was good. He obviously missed the two friendlies? Obviously, one in France, and he was on the bench at Colchester, but didn't come on. But obviously, he played the full 90 minutes down at Birmingham. Let's talk about Amari Hutchinson then. Nathan Broadhead, latest boys, because that's still in the background. Obviously, Nathan Broadhead came off the bench against Birmingham. Amari Hutchinson's got a throat infection, hasn't he?
Yeah, and Kieran McKenna was very firm on that post-match. It was put to him by Phil Ham at TWTD that apparently Amari Hutchinson's got a throat infection, because I think Kieran had said that on his Sky interview pre-match. At the pre-match press conference that we're all at, it was just described as a medical issue. Now, given everything that's happening around Amari at the moment, there was a healthy amount of cynicism surrounding that being the reason for his absence, given we'd already heard that his head wasn't in the right place and that's why he hadn't gone to Auxerre. So I understood the cynicism around that. But Kieran McKenna, you know, was very quick to say, not apparently, definitely. He's got a throat infection. He came in, he trained Monday, Tuesday. He was looking good. And then he's poorly. He's got a high temperature. He's got a throat infection. He had to go home. So, we'll see how he is next week. Obviously, we've got a game tomorrow night at Bromley, the real feature in that, and then obviously a big one against Southampton on Sunday. We're just in this kind of holding pattern at the moment, aren't we? Where it's pretty clear that Amari wants to explore Premier League opportunities, which has rejected bids of £35 million from both Brentford and Nottingham Forest. For him, the relegation released clause has expired. Ipswich are in control of what fee they want for him. It's felt for me a little while now that will eventually kind of get done, but Ipswich are in control. And I think there's probably a feeling that the more you say no, the more clubs will want him, and the price could go up. So, Ipswich aren't going to let him go if it's not on their terms. We'll see how that pans out. It's not an ideal situation to be going into the season with.
Yeah, AJ, I think there's obviously a lot of Town fans out there frustrated with how it's going. Some people say his reputation, R.R. Hutchinson's reputation, has probably now been scarred a little bit. How are you feeling about how it is? Because that's another saga that's happening this summer.
All the sagas, all the time. Yeah, I don't want to kind of jump to conclusions and, you know, kind of bring out things that we don't know about. We don't know that Amari's throwing his toys out the pram. We don't know about these things. We don't know what the conversations necessarily were going into France, where the decision was made for him not to travel. We don't know if that was something that Kieran McKenna was kind of backing and in agreement with, or if it wasn't. So I think it's not fair for us to sit here and kind of speculate on that and talk about what could be going on behind the scenes. I think it's just fair at the moment to essentially have to wait out. And it's a bit rubbish, to be honest, isn't it, to have to do that. But you've got to think about all things considered here. If he comes back and he's an Ipswich Town player, I think he deserves all the support, because he's been excellent in an Ipswich Town shirt, and he's been one of kind of the big McKenna men of the last couple of seasons. And if a move doesn't happen, he deserves that. And if it does, I think there has to be a sense of knowing that a fee, I think, will probably take an initial 40 million. Is what it kind of feels like at the moment. Potentially, if you could get a bidding war started, could go higher, as Stu's kind of alluded to. So with that, just saying, you know what, you've gone to the Premier League, you've attracted the interest. Good luck. Thank you for earning us a load of money. So either way, it's not nice being in the limbo, but I think you have to see the positives from it, whatever way you go. If he comes back, you've got a top player in the Championship. He goes, you've got quite a bit of money to play with. Yeah, you'll probably need to sign a replacement. But it's obviously not easy and not fun to be stuck in this kind of nether zone of not really knowing what the situation will be, even though I think we all have a gut feeling that it will trend towards a departure.
Doubling your money in a year is not bad going, is it, when you look at it that way? This doesn't have to be acrimonious. It doesn't have to be. Doesn't always have to pin some sort of emotion on any of the parties involved in this. And Kieran, as ever, kind of articulated this really well pre-match. There needs to be empathy from both parties. And I think there's a really good relationship there between Kieran and Amari that says, I understand that careers are short and you're an ambitious boy, and I understand why you might want to do this. But you also need to see it from the club's point of view, the club that gave you your chance. To shine, that has helped you develop. We're short of attacking options at the moment, and we also need to kind of protect ourselves financially, and that can be a sensible, calm conversation. And as Alex says, whichever way this pans out, there doesn't need to be any kind of hate sort of directed towards Amari. If he stays, people will get over it very quickly. Certainly if he performs like he did in that game against Charlton in pre-season, where he came on and was really exciting, people move on. It's just, for me, I hate having the transfer window open for the first month of the season. It doesn't help anybody. I don't know what the solution is to it, because it would probably be too short a window to squeeze it all in into the summer. But it's not ideal for managers, for players, for fans to have all this sort of stuff up in the air while proper games are underway.
It's funny, because back in the day, they didn't really have a transfer window, did they? You could sign a player whenever you wanted. Mm. So obviously back in the day. But yeah, I don't know, maybe when the season ends, that's when the transfer window opens. And when they're back to pre-season, that's when it closes. Because then at least everyone's got a full pre-season under their belt. But I don't know. I think they just... football these days, I just like it to be a window around everything. But
yeah, and it's also sort of different leagues have slightly different windows, and when they start, it's really hard to sort of align it all. So there probably is no obvious solution, but it's not the best, is it? But it is what it is, to use the football cliche.
Indeed. And AJ, just to round off the transfer talk, obviously Nate Broadhead one is still up in the air. We know the position really right now. Town obviously need to sign players before Nathan Broadhead goes. What's his update on that? And also, Aaron Muric could be going to Italy, which is not a bad move for him.
Yeah, let's go with Broadhead first. I'm not going to take you through this whole thing because I think I've done it a couple of times on the pod already. Interest from Wrexham, talks, kind of £7.5 million deal agreed, but not signed off. Just because of speculation with Amari, I think it is going to play a part in it, and also just a lack of options. So there's too much up in the air to let Nathan Broadhead go. Kieran McKenna said he'd like to explore the option to go to Wrexham. And looking at it, it would be a good deal for the club, wouldn't it, for a player with a year left on his contract. £7.5 million is a fair wedge to get. So the situation hasn't really changed that much, but Nathan Broadhead's fit and he's coming in and putting in a shift, and I think he deserves credit for that. He could throw his toys out the pram and say, I want to go to Wrexham, you've agreed a deal, why haven't you signed it off? But he's done really well, and to make himself available, came off the bench against Birmingham on Friday night. Kieran McKenna said he's had a part to play in that. Wouldn't be surprised he has a part to play at Bromley tomorrow night as well. We'll wait and see, but yeah, definitely deserves credit for that, and we'll see where that one goes, probably towards the end of the window, I'd say. As soon as Ipswich are in a position to let him go, I think he could go. So I could see it kind of coming to a quick conclusion. My gut feeling is it will end with him at Wrexham, but never say never, of course. And then with Aaron Muric, he's one that I think everyone expected to go. There were kind of some whispers of interest. Sassuolo was mentioned early in the window, then it was Turkey. Now reports from Italy saying it will be Sassuolo who are pushing to get this deal done. Which is an initial loan with an option to buy at the end of the season for €10 million, which again pretty much means that Ipswich would get their money back if they chose to sign him at the end of the season. One of those deals where you just hope he goes there and performs and wins over the fans, and it's probably best for all parties if Town can get their money back and we can all move on and he can have a better kind of next stage in his career in Italy. So we'll have to wait and see with that one, with Arrow. But yeah, that's the latest with him and Nathan Broadhead.
Still, I know you wanted to jump in there, so go ahead.
On Muric, getting your money back might be difficult, but at least some of your money back, you hope he goes there and does well, and it's not too big a financial disaster for Ipswich. I think it was £8 million, we said. So there were some higher fees reported at the time, but £8 million plus some add-ons. So hopefully Ipswich can claw back a decent amount of that in the long term. Nathan Broadhead, we talk about sort of players, where are their heads at when these things are going on? Didn't look like he downed tools on Friday night to me. Came on, looked really fired up. He was wanting the ball, running at people, very much got to the speed of the game quickly, screaming at the referee when he wasn't getting fouls and things like that. So you know, fair play to him for being all in that situation. Didn't look like someone who was worried about getting injured and deals being off. I know kind of the opposite has been said about Leif Davis's performance on Friday night. He was nowhere near as influential as we've seen him at left back. What I would say is there's a couple of things on that. One, he's just back from an injury. I believe it's a hip injury that kept him out at Auxerre. So there might be that. That was a late fitness call for Ipswich. Maybe they pushed that a little bit more than they would have liked, given the lack of left-back options. So we don't know sort of how he was physically. So I would say that. And and it was a difficult game as well, wasn't it? It was high press. Ipswich didn't have a lot of the ball. So I'm not going to read too much into Leif Davis's performance kind of being wrapped up in any kind of transfer-related issues. But that probably brings us on to the game, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Good segue, Stu. And we've got a lot to talk about. It wasn't the most prettiest of games. The Championship curtain raiser. Obviously, Birmingham on a high after 111 points in League One. Of course, Town relegated from the Premier League last season. We're going to play Kieran McKenna's thoughts on the game, boys, first of all, and then we'll jump into our snap thoughts and talk about the team and the first half. So, K-Dog, over to you.
Kieran, a fiery, intense opening day fixture. You've managed to get the point at the end. What's your verdict on that?
Yeah, it was a really intense game in the first half. Probably some of what we expected, really, or mostly was as we expected. It wasn't great quality, to be honest. Both teams were good intensity, good organisation, but no real not enough passages of play in the game. We had a couple of good chances, maybe the better chances in the first half, but probably less of the play. There was nothing really in the game until the first goal. And after that, we improved, and probably that was maybe what we needed to sort of go for the game a little bit more. So there's positives in how we battled. It was always going to be a difficult place to come here tonight, and the group fought well in the first half. For sure, we need to impose ourselves on the game earlier than what we did. And to be the team that we want to be this year, we have to impose ourselves on the ball better than what we did. But the players stuck at it. Good impact off the bench with all the substitutes. And the late goal, which we know in a championship season, getting them are really absolutely vital, especially with good impacts on the bench. So positives in terms of coming away from the point, will be stronger for the game. There's no doubt in my mind it came early for us, to be honest, as a group. And I think a lot of teams would have came here and lost tonight. So it wasn't a fantastic game, didn't play as well as we would have liked, but we found a way to battle for a point, which hopefully will be an important one at the end.
Very important. AJ, start with you. Snap thoughts on the game. Feisty, fiery, fouls galore. A hostile atmosphere. Thoughts on the game?
Beautifully violent. Not what I kind of expected from these two teams. Thought it would be less like that, basically, looking at the way that Birmingham played in League One. Possession heavy, wanted to control games, quite kind of open and expansive. Ipswich, we all know what they're capable of under Kieran McKenna, and especially in the Championship. So I was expecting kind of two teams really going at it. And from an attacking sense, it wasn't that. It was fairly limited in chances, especially from open play. And it was one of those games, I think there was a foul about every 2.5 minutes, and it was kind of broken up, but it wasn't done so in a way that didn't make it enjoyable to watch, just because you could tell it was a really kind of passionate, aggressive game, and both teams kind of bought in, A, to the atmosphere, and B, to, I think, the narrative as well. These are going to be two teams I would expect to be right at the top of the division. I think Ipswich know that Birmingham will be promotion rivals, and Birmingham will expect to be in that position up against title favourites Ipswich. So, that's kind of the feeling on the game. You can have a look at Ipswich's performance in a couple of different ways. There are things that you can like, and there's things that need improvement on. It definitely was probably a step down from smash and grab. I wouldn't call it a smash and grab, but yeah, maybe a tear down from that one. No denying that they were probably fortunate to get the point from it, but all in all, Birmingham kept going deeper and deeper, and although it was a handball and a controversial one at that, I think that Town probably were in a position to go and take a point from it towards the end of the match and push hard to do so. Push hard to get three even at the end. Mm. So up from here, not an ideal first fixture, as Kieran McKenna said, against this kind of Birmingham team. If that is, it's one of the things that George Hurst said, and I'm worried I'm going to take the line out that you might have used, but he said if that's the best performance of the season, then it's going to be a pretty bad season. It should all be kind of an improvement from here.
Mm. And Stu, a new rivalry is born, I'd say, because going into this game, Birmingham was always that team, like they've got the money, they've got Tom Brady effect, but this game had a lot of talking points.
It's fun and games, wasn't it? You could feel it in the atmosphere, and we know, don't we, the power of the feel-good factor, the rebirth, the momentum. There's so many similarities between Ipswich and Birmingham with the US money, returning from League One, a young career coach that's got them going. I guess the difference is Ipswich were a bit of a surprise factor when they came up to the Championship. One or two were talking about them maybe being able to go up again, but nowhere near the amount of people now that are talking about Birmingham being right up there as promotion favourites. But yeah, red hot atmosphere, and it carried into the game. I think those players, those Birmingham players, were fueled by adrenaline. It reminded me a lot of Ipswich versus Liverpool on the opening day of last season, and how Ipswich caught Liverpool by surprise with their in your face intensity, with that Jacob Greaves tackle on Szoboszlai early on that got people going. And for an hour or so, Ipswich were probably the better team, and then ran out of steam a little bit, and then Liverpool's quality obviously came to the fore. It wasn't, obviously, then Ipswich didn't have that level of top quality that could then sort of take over when Birmingham tired. But in that final half an hour, certainly the reaction to going behind was really good. And yes, as Alex says, the goal comes in slightly fortuitous circumstances, but pressure had been building. And, you know, looking at the final stats, it's easy to get caught up in the fact that Birmingham, I think, for the first half an hour or so had 84% possession, and it felt quite one-sided at times, and Ipswich under the cosh. But when you look at the game as a whole and the way Ipswich responded in the second half and the way the subs made a difference, I don't think a draw was sort of wildly out of kilter with what we saw of the game as a whole. So probably, you know, the worst time to go to Birmingham, a time when the squad is still being built, which we've already discussed, time where sort of relationships on the pitch are still building, players are kind of adapting and getting up to speed. Birmingham chucked absolutely everything they had at Ipswich. Their players were going down with cramp left, right and centre at the end, and they still couldn't win. And so for me, I am at the more sort of positive end of the spectrum with this result, certainly, and elements of the performance within the context of everything that's going on.
Because, yeah, there was obviously a lot of town fans not really happy, you know, disjointed performance and stuff. But as Kieran McKenna said in his audio, you know, this game maybe came a bit too soon for this squad. But obviously that was the fixtures, how it sort of randomised to be the opening game of the season. But AJ, obviously Birmingham, I want to quickly go on to their disallowed goal, because that was very soft. Obviously, you know, Jake Greaves got fouled, and talk us through it.
Yeah. When I saw it in real time, I was like, absolutely no way. No way should that have been disallowed. And then when I saw it on the replay the first time, I also felt really strongly that Town had been given a lifeline. When I've kind of taken time since then to look back at it again, I can understand it more. Kind of when you watch it and you see the angles, you check the rules of the game, I can, but it is soft. There's no denying it's a very soft disallowed goal. Jacob Greaves lets the ball bounce and then loses out to Kyogo, who is about what feels like about a foot shorter than him as well. Really good finish from the Japanese international as well. And look, if I'm a referee, that's 1-0 personally. But I can understand why it had been disallowed. There are probably quite a few referees who in that moment would have given it. So, yeah, definitely a let-off. And an early warning sign that I think Town understood, but maybe just given the intensity and the fact that there were, I mean, you use the term disjointed, there were kind of like a few sloppy passes and a bit like that. It was difficult to try and build against that and build a bit of momentum to counter it.
Hmm. And yes, Stu, obviously Birmingham did in the end score. It was, not a great goal, I have to admit. Your point of view on that?
Yeah, not great. You shouldn't be conceding when seconds after your goalkeeper's just kicked it straight upfield. That's what happened. Alex Palmer knocked it up to the halfway line. Ipswich lose first contact. Ball loops back onto the edge of the box and got themselves in a bit of a muddle from there. Is it Kyogo who, again, very similar to the incident Alex has just described, loops the ball over the goalkeeper, comes back off the inside of the post. And Stansfield, to be fair to him, in pressure circumstances, took his time and emphatic finish, but not a great goal from an Ipswich perspective.
Yeah, Dara Shea was like tempted to do a Christoph Berra, wasn't he? He was like, should I save it? But no, he didn't. but yeah, it was obviously 1-0, and obviously the atmosphere was blew up at St Andrews. But still, as you mentioned, it sort of woke Town up a little bit. And I want to talk to you about the subs making an impact, because we had that last time. It was a super strength back in the championship, you know, when Town got promoted, and it could be the same this time around. You know, Chaplin, Broadhead, El Hamadi, Ashley Young, Cameron Humphreys come on, and they made an impact. That's what changed the game for Town.
All five of them, to be fair. And I did, you know, Alex and I talked during the game, and I felt in the early stages of the second half, Birmingham, again, started fast, but, you know, it didn't last that long, few minutes. And actually leading up to the goal, I felt like we were starting to see elements of Birmingham tiring and the adrenaline just starting to wear off and some tiredness creeping in. And I was feeling quite confident that Ipswich would finish the stronger. Then they get the goal, which kind of breathes new life into them and the crowd. But Ipswich's response was great. And we looked at the two benches beforehand. For all this talk about Ipswich's squad looking a little thin in certain areas, which it certainly is, I still felt like Ipswich had the stronger bench. And that's without certain players being injured. That's, you know, no Philogene, who didn't pass his fitness test. No Hutchinson, as we've talked about. And they were still able to bring on the joint top goal scorers from the last Championship promotion season in Chaplin and Broadhead. That's not a bad position to be in. And I mentioned it already. I thought Broadhead, no hint at all of his mind being elsewhere. He looked very much up for it. Chaplin's the one that deserves the biggest credit for me. I thought he really changed things. I just think he knits the sort of the attacking side of things together a bit more. We talk about Szmodics being a second striker. He is more, Chaplin is more of a playmaker, I would say there. And obviously he's a goal scorer as well, but he was dropping into little pockets, playing nice little sharp first time passes. And that just got Ipswich playing a little bit more. Again, the caveat against it's slightly easier to do against a tiring team than it is from the start, but I thought he made a big difference. Ali Alhamady then comes on and plays right wing, which I don't think we've seen an awful lot of. He was his usual sort of hustle, bustle. I think he committed a foul within seconds, but he provided a bit of drive and got Ipswich going. Ashley Young then comes on, gets absolute dog's abuse as a former Aston Villa player. He comes on to a cacophony of boos. Every touch, cacophony of boos, various chants, but he looked probably the calmest player on the pitch. I thought everything he did was just assured at right back. And likewise, Cameron Humphreys, who came on for the, I think, in the 84th minute, I thought he added something to Ipswich, a real element of calm to his play as well. So you're right, subs were a massive part of the Championship promotion season. How many times did we see the front four changed on 70 minutes and that grind teams down? How many times did we see Ipswich score late goals in that promotion season? Leicester, Southampton, there's several more in there as well. So, it came in fortuitous circumstances, but it did also feel like pressure was starting to build and the subs played a massive part in that.
Although I will admit, deep down, I didn't think we were going to score. Thankfully, we did get the penalty. But AJ, how were you feeling that final minutes? Even though we were knocking down the door, but we weren't like really knocking it down. We were just having little moments. But yeah, I have to admit, deep down, I didn't think Town was going to score.
No, nor did I. You kind of have those flicker of hopes. I think you get it after covering, watching, supporting Ipswich for long enough. I say long enough, basically the last kind of 2-3 seasons, especially the Championship promotion campaign, that when you see a board go up with more than 3 minutes, your initial thought is goal. There's going to be a goal. There's a goal in this. But having watched Ipswich, you know, it wasn't a game of many chances. And it felt like to me it was going to be a one chance game and Birmingham had it. And to be fair, it kind of was. I mean, should we talk about the goal then, the equaliser? Town putting on pressure and they get the corner, well delivered in, and I think it's Greaves who jumps up with Lyndon Dykes off the bench. And again, this is where the controversy comes in now, and you've got to look at the rules and is it right, is it wrong, is it hard, all of these different kind of things. Dykes, as you naturally have to do when you jump up to challenge for a corner, jumps with his arms. So he jumps up like that, raises his arms up to challenge for the ball. As he does it, the ball strikes him on the arm because his arms are up because he's challenging for the ball from a corner. Referee blows for a penalty. Birmingham fury. Town a little bit confused because it's so kind of out of the blue. It didn't really, especially from our point of view, look like a penalty. We took probably about 30 seconds to properly realise it was a penalty. I know that some of the players who were actually on the pitch didn't realise it was a penalty for a while. But that's what it was. And yeah, I mean, look, my perspective is it's harsh, but by the letter of the law, true. So it's probably the right decision there. George Hurst steps up, sticks it into the back of the net, cups his ear to the home fans, which sees some cups, funnily enough, thrown at him. Connor Chaplin boots the ball into the home end, which sparks all sorts. Massive kickoff, huge scenes. Bit of a fight, a lot of aftermath to that goal, but another one that will live long in the memory, won't it?
Yeah, incredible scene, Stu, because that was just a moment of madness, that 5 minutes or so, just loads of things were happening.
Yeah, in the press box as well, sort of corner comes in, referee blows, it looks like he's pointed to the spot. No one kind of reacts that way. It was hard to see live from our vantage point what for. We're all looking at each other. Is he giving a penalty? Is it a penalty? I think it's it might be a corner. No, it is a penalty. I think he's given it, hasn't he? And we're all sort of looking at each other. Then
an indirect free kick again.
Yeah, and then a couple of Birmingham fans kind of come running over towards the press box because we've got the screens there. They're craning their neck. Then it becomes clear that sort of as players disperse and somebody's got the ball, Hurst has got the ball in his hands, he's given it. All sorts of expletives are coming from Birmingham fans at that stage. It was absolute chaos. Really emotional game. I'm not going to sit here and bemoan ugly scenes. Should Connor Chaplin smash the ball into the crowd? No. Should people in the crowd be throwing things onto the pitch? No. You see Ali Alhamadi kind of boot a bottle away or something that's come on in it all. George Hurst cupping is it? It's everything that we've discussed. It's the context of this game. It's the moment it arrived in. It's been a game where they've been kicking lumps out of each other all match. It just all came to boiling point. Are we going to say we don't want to see that in football? We certainly don't want to see a fan sort of running down and swinging at one of the players. Of course we don't. But the rest of it, I quite like. We don't really want sort of sanitised football matches. And, you know, we're bemoaning the fact that football isn't like that anymore. And then we get a game like that come along and everyone's going, oh, don't want to see that. We kind of do, don't we? As long as there has to be some limits. As I say, fans getting involved in stuff and all of that is not great. But I'm all for it. Nice bit of spice. It was good.
Yeah. It's a shame, obviously, it was the other end, because if it was in front of the Town fans, that away end, it was unbelievable scenes anyway. Limbs, as they say. But Town players, they would have ran, of course, right to that end. And I'm sure there would have been Town fans jumping on the pitch and it would have been unbelievable scenes. But yeah, it wasn't great scenes, obviously, with the Jack Taylor incident and stuff with a fan coming on. But yeah, that was just carnage for a bit, wasn't it, boys? Just, you know, the game wasn't able to kick off until that got sorted. And then obviously at full time.
And then straight from the kickoff, George Hurst charges 50 yards and smashes into one of their centre halves. I mean, boiling and boiling, hadn't it, in that second half. I think as Birmingham players realised they were starting to run out of gas, they turned to the dark arts a bit more. There was one where I think Kyogo stood on Greaves' ankle. That looked a bit naughty to me, sort of after the ball had gone. I think it was Cochrane left a bit on Sammy Schmoddick's long after the ball had gone down the side. And there's one that I think people are talking about being a potential penalty earlier in the game where it is Cochrane who sort of blocks off Dar O'Shea. I think that probably would have been a free kick. It looks like that first contact was just outside the area, possibly. But again, that was, you know, no eyes for the ball at all, just literally looking to block him off as a set piece came into the box. Ipswich gave as good as they got, and I like that. You know, they didn't, you know, this isn't the sort of game that this squad has been built for. But we saw it in the Championship. The main memories from that Championship promotion season are the 4-3 wins and the late winners and the sparkling football and the Davis cutbacks. But it's easy to forget they had to grind out a lot of results along the way. The 0-0 draw or the draw at Blackburn on Good Friday. There's plenty of others if you go through it. Is it 0-0? Alex is...
They won that game. Connor Chaplin won.
Oh, Blackburn, 1-0 win at Blackburn. But that was a proper sort of grind it out result, wasn't it? And there were some others along the way. You have to roll your sleeves up in the Championship. And they did in this game. And I like that.
Yes, I think as well, it's quite refreshing, isn't it? Having had a season of, and you talk about sanitised football, of VAR moaning rightly in a lot of cases about decisions and, oh, Connor Chaplin's been pulled back and it should have been a penalty against Leicester. And if they win that, you think about all this and how many times did we just see quite robotic football? And of course, it's high-level football and it's great players, but like, this was a totally different world. This is what you expect of the Championship. And although it's not the kind of game I want to see Ipswich Town playing week in, week out, because we'd all be exhausted and Ipswich probably wouldn't win that many points. It's not the style of play they want to kind of have. It's also a bit refreshing, isn't it, after a season of VAR and just sometimes kind of boring, clean football.
This isn't the game to judge Ipswich on as an attacking force. And I've seen enough in pre-season to know that they're going to be fine with scoring goals from open play. I know we come away from this one going one shot on target is a penalty, 95th minute, didn't create a lot else, couldn't get the attacking players going. I think that's a lot to do with the occasion, the opposition, the style of the match. Sunday's game against Southampton, you would imagine stylistically, is going to be completely different. So let's see a few of those matches before we start making judgments on players and how ready Ipswich Town are. I wrote in my verdict piece on Monday, I'd be fascinated to see what the ball in play time would have been from this game, because I think it was 38 fouls in the end. It was really stop-start. I've been reliably informed this morning. I don't know if you want to take a guess at this, what the ball in play time was.
It's got to be very low. I'm really bad to even guess.
44 minutes.
Wow.
Less than half a game of football with the ball was actually live, which could well be a record low for Ipswich. I don't know where those stats are stored. We haven't got access to that. But 44 minutes. Very, very little football actually played in this game.
Yeah, I'm sure Sky loved that. But that is what it is. As football terms go. AJ, you spoke to George Hurst as well after the game. So we've got a bit of a clip here and then we're going to do our stand and any other business from the game before we look ahead to a cup game. So let's see from Hurst, Town's new number nine.
George, did you kind of enjoy buying into the blood and thunder of this a little bit? It kicked off multiple times, fans throwing stuff. You had a little bit of everything in that.
For sure. I love these kind of games. You know, that's Northern boy like myself, it's a game that I've been involved in plenty of times. You know, coming up from Sunday League, you get games like that. So, yeah, I love it. It's a game that, you know, we're ready for. If it needs to be that, then I know we've got a change room full of lads who, no matter who's on that pitch, are ready to go and put themselves out there.
You're happy at times to be, dare I say, the wind-up merchant, cup your ear after you get a bit of stick and sometimes give it back a bit as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily do it to wind them up. It's just a thing in the moment. I just do it. I do what I feel, and you know, when you've been getting stick for 95 minutes, sometimes you don't mind giving a little bit back when you score the goal that gets us a point. So it's part and parcel of football. You know, I'm going to get stick. I'm going to give the stick back, and yeah, fine by me.
The manager's kind of mentioned that this could be two teams up there at the end of the season. Two teams with similar aspirations. Do you feel that with this game today?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, watching the clips of Birmingham, we knew what kind of team they were. We saw what kind of team they are today. They're a hell of a side, and you know, they made us work for the point, for sure. I think they'll have a good season, but ultimately that's, you know, not of interest to me really. It's about what we do as a team and how far we can go with Ipswich.
Yeah. Last one from me. The penalty decision at the end seemed quite drawn out. We didn't have any clue what was going on with that. Have the referees been in and spoken to you about, I know there have been some changes in terms of contact at set pieces, handballs and other occasions. What have they kind of said to you if you've had that talk?
It's just handball's a handball, you know. It's if it's accidental, if it's, you know, your arm's in a natural position down by your side, then they're going to be, you know, more reluctant to give it, which I think is fair, because, you know, you can't get out of the way of everything. But I think when Greaves is going up for the header and, you know, whoever it was, his hand is above their head and it hits them on the hand, I think that's probably the right decision. And I didn't know what he'd given at the time, if I'm being brutally honest, but once he told me it was a penalty, then yeah, obviously I was pretty happy about it.
I don't think George Hurst has ever done a bad interview. He's just such a great talker, isn't he, boys? Says some good stuff there. All right then, what else would you like to talk about from the game, guys? Azor Matasiwa. Nailed it again. He had a very tough championship debut, didn't he? Probably not an ideal game for him, Stu, to make his first his debut for Town. Obviously had a, you know, not a bad pre-season, but he got chucked into a very tough game.
Yeah. New country, new league, new teammates. He's not been here that long. He only signed, I think, a day before the trip to Austria, playing in one of the most vital roles in the team, filling huge boots in Sam Morsy. and it was difficult for him at times. It looked like it kind of the speed of it caught him unawares on certain occasions. He got dispossessed and pressed quite a lot. But in amongst all of that, I thought we saw some flashes of his qualities, his energy, his willingness to tackle, his desire to play forwards. As I say, we'll see different. Sunday's game will be very different. There'll be some other matches where Ipswich are facing deep blocks and having lots of possession, and that's when we can really start to truly judge Azor Matasiwa. So an adaptation period's going to be required for him, but I think we knew that. And he'll have learned a hell of a lot from that match, I think.
Yeah, I think most of the players will do as well. AJ, any other talking points before we move on? There is positives from this game. There'll be some people disappointed, like Town need to wake up if they want to be up there, but there's still some positives to take.
Yeah, I don't think it's wake up. I think they're very well aware of the situation. I think it's just a tricky game at a tricky time when things are not settled. And I think people will look at this weekend and say, well, Southampton have come down and they've taken 3 points. And Leicester have come down and they've taken 3 points. Well, yeah, Southampton had to score twice in stoppage time to beat a Wrexham side that, whisper it quietly, I don't think are great. And Leicester only just squeezed past 10-man Sheffield Wednesday. You can hardly field the team. So I don't think that the comparisons are fair. I think that it's going to take, and this will be the same for any team, it's going to take probably 8 to 10 games to start to get a feel of what a side season is going to be like. I'm not going to sit here and say Bristol City were good against Sheffield United and they're going to be in the top six. They'll be in the mix, I think. You just have to wait and see. So good things, bad things. Sammy Smodics, I think, would be having nightmares of his miss in the first half, because I feel like he's the kind of player that would tuck that away. As the goalkeeper passed to him and he fired wide. But he and everyone else will soon, I think, hit the ground running. Don't look into this one too much.
I like the way Ipswich defended. There's been a lot of talk about how Ipswich didn't create a lot and how the attacking side of things didn't really get going. But in tough circumstances, let's not forget, Birmingham didn't have a ton of really good chances in the match. I know Stansfield had two or three in the first half that were sort of not gilt-edged chances, were they? He would have been disappointed not to hit the target, a player of his standards. But I think in general, Ipswich sort of limited Birmingham to very little. As Kieran said in his interview, Ipswich probably had the better chances in that first half. Alex has just mentioned the Smodics one. Taylor had a header. Davis at the far post where he couldn't quite get the right connection outside of the boot. I didn't come away from it blown away by Birmingham. And I know there was a lot of other people in the press box that came away going that definitely Birmingham are going to be up there, really impressed by Birmingham, really disappointed by Ipswich. That seemed to be the general consensus from the sort of the neutrals in the press box, and maybe from the sort of the neutrals in terms of fans watching on. But I didn't necessarily feel that, to be honest. Yeah, as Alex says, let's give it a few games before we start sort of jumping to too many conclusions.
Very much so. And I want to give a shout out to Ashley Young, because he was fantastic. And also, as you mentioned earlier, he obviously got a lot of abuse from the Birmingham fans. But at the end, he had the last laugh because, he's one more than you, with the Town fans chanting. And so Ashley Young, he is one more than you. And he had a really good cameo. And obviously, I said his set pieces will be a thing that we'll look forward to, and he was obviously part of that handball incident. So Ashley Young, if you're listening, good cameo from you. But boys, any other business before we wrap up and look ahead to Bromley?
Nope, no other business. We go again, Bromley
indeed, which is a new team that Town will be playing. I don't think they've ever played Bromley, from my knowledge, in terms of a competitive game anyway. They're obviously they're in League Two. They've been there now. This is their second season. 11th last year. Andy Woodman, their manager. They've had an unbeaten start. They drew with Shrewsbury on the opening day and they beat Barnet 2-0, which, of course, Kieran Slicker has recently signed for them, and he was in goal making his debut. But Alex, you've got a little bit of a connection with Bromley. You've spoken to their chairman or somebody of sorts?
CEO. Yeah. That'll be online tomorrow. Really good chat with him, Mark Hammond, just kind of talking through a bit about the game and also about Bromley's rise, because people don't know a lot about Bromley. They've kind of come from nowhere in the eyes of maybe fans who don't follow National League and Interleague 2 with great interest, which is understandable for a lot of people. But this is a club who's primarily kind of played kind of level, be kind of step two non-league, so the sixth tier is where they've spent a lot of their time. And just through obviously some investment, but also really clever running of the club, they've been able to get themselves up. So they were Conference South up until 2014-15, then ended up into the National League. They spent just under a decade there until winning promotion in 2023-24, did that one at Wembley, came up with Chesterfield, and then had a really good season last year. Teams that come up from National League into League Two generally do. And the ambition is in the mid to long term now to see if they can kick on and go again. They've got a real consistency in the manager, who's done quite a lot in terms of his coaching at previous jobs. He's bought into what Bromley is. I know that he got linked with Cambridge when they had a vacancy, and he made sure that he wanted to stick it out with Bromley, and has been really keen on this project. And they've been clever with their recruitment, got a good squad. I think the headline has to be Michael Cheek in terms of what he's able to do. Veteran striker, 33, been with them since 2019-20, bagged 25 league goals last year, which made him the top scorer in League Two. So he's probably the one to watch. He's the big goalsman who's been also linked with a move away this summer. Does have the feeling, and I'm sure Sky picked up on this by putting it on TV, does have the feeling of a potential banana skin. This is one of Bromley's biggest home games in terms of the opponents that they played at cup level in a long, long time. But they've got Binham. They went up to Newcastle actually in the Carabao Cup last year and took the lead in that game as well. Good home form, good League Two side. Definitely not an easy match by any means.
Carabao Cup first round, just to mention. Normally, I think Premier League teams who just got relegated don't go in the first round, but because of the amount of teams in England are playing in Europe, we obviously Town are having to start in the first round, Stu. How are you feeling for this one? There'll be obviously a rotation from Kieran McKenna.
Yeah, Ipswich could have probably done without this fixture, given everything that we've discussed. Transfer situations up in the air, a few little knocks that players are recovering from. 3G pitch, is that right, at Bromley, Alex? I don't know if that's still in case. I'll have to double check.
Let me get back to you. I might have a look while you're talking.
Certainly a modest sized stadium, I think around 5,000 capacity, only sort of about 1,500 or so seats in there. We can only send Alex tomorrow night because the press box is restricted people to one person per organisation. So I will have to watch from afar on TV while Alex gets himself to Bromley. It's got potential banana skin, hasn't it, Ipswich? The League Cup hasn't been particularly kind to Ipswich over the years. I can think of several upsets, certainly during the Mick McCarthy era. Always seemed to play the likes of Stevenage and Northampton. I'm trying to think who else there's been along the way. Obviously, Wimbledon on penalties this time last year. Should we try and have a stab at the starting lineup? I would imagine it will be wholesale changes, but it's a bit of a struggle to make all 11 changes given the options at the moment.
Or the big question mark is Chubakpom, Jens Gustay, could they start or will they be on the bench and then bring them on? Do you think they're ready to go? They haven't really had a pre-season, have they?
Neither have had a pre-season of sorts. Certainly haven't played any games for Napoli and Ajax respectively. Now, do you just basically treat this as, well, you need to get some minutes into their legs at some stage, and this is an opportunity to do that, whether that is from the start or off the bench, I'm not so sure, but you would think that they would take this as an opportunity to try and get some minutes into them. There's some obvious ones that will definitely start. Walton in goal, Wolfenden and Kipre will almost certainly be the centre-halves. Ashley Young will start, but in what position? We'll have to see. Broadhead, Chaplin, Ali Alhamadi, and then it's whether Kyusta, Akpom start. I would imagine young Finley Barbrook, who I liked him in pre-season. He will start probably in midfield. As all Matasi were out, that Friday night game will have taken a lot out of those players. So I imagine that will be as much rotation as possible.
And no penalties, please, Town. Do it in the 90 minutes. I think there's no extra time, is there, AJ? I think it goes straight. Depends with the Carabao Cup.
So. Straight to penalties in the Carabao Cup, yeah. Good for deadlines, I think, is the best thing. I've had a couple before. I remember going to Brentford with Cambridge and they won on penalties, and that was nervy with one of the Prince bits we were doing.
Definitely. And how are you feeling for this, mate? Do you think Town can get it done in the 90 minutes?
Gut feeling is kind of, it is a banana skin. It's a team that has obviously played another league game, is probably ahead in their season again because they had to start pre-season earlier, end pre-season earlier, and then have had a couple of league games to play as well. It's probably a little bit of a more settled squad because they've not had huge changes to make. You have to factor in the level. There's a big gap in terms of on-pitch quality between Bromley and Ipswich, but that hasn't mattered when it's been Wimbledon, for example.
Maidstone.
And they were able, or Maidstone is the obvious one, of course. So, I mean, the Maidstone one, I'd look at more of a fluke in terms of, I mean, you can never say it's a fluke necessarily, but, you know, if freak there is result. Ever going to be one, freak result. Yeah, we'll go with that. Then that was going to be the one. Whereas the Wimbledon game, for example, was one where they kind of reacted well and played well and built the crowd. And I think it will be, it's a capacity crowd, a small capacity crowd at Hayes Lane. And it's the kind of atmosphere where they're going to go direct. They're going to try and get it on top of you. They're going to make it uncomfortable. And if they can sense an upset in that crowd, it's going to be a pretty special atmosphere. So yeah, of course Ipswich can go there and get the job done. But I do have some lingering concerns in the back of my head.
It's not, I've just looked, it's not a 3G pitch. I think they had to change it for grass upon promotion to the EFL. So I just thought I'd rectify that. But yeah, this is not the fixture Ipswich needed after a really physical opening day. At least it was the Friday night, so there's a little bit more time to recover for this. But now to go to a League Two team who are going to be treating this as their cup final and going to be bang up for this, it's going to be another test of character for what will be a well-changed Ipswich Town side. But as always, we go into these saying you still look at a team on paper. I mean, this is the one I've got written down. Walton in goal, Young right back, Wolfenden, Kipra, maybe Humphreys at left back, potentially. Barbrook and Kajusta, question mark, central midfield. Akpom on the right, Chaplin, Broadhead, Alhamadi up front. I mean, you could put Akpom up front and Ali on the right where he finished, but that would be a kind of all 11 changes. Some obvious question marks in there as to whether Kajusta and Akpom are thrown in from the start. That on paper should be enough to beat a League Two side. But as we know, it doesn't always work out that way in these cup games.
Yeah, because it's played on the grass, not paper. But yeah, we shall see. I want to quickly name check actually a Bromley player as well. Omar Suomni. Butchered that completely. But he's
Suomni, I think. Suomni. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously a Town youth graduate who is a unit, by the way. 6'6". He's one of their defenders. But yeah, he left Town, I think, back in 2015. And he's had a bit of a journey at Yeovil, Colchester and Bromley and Sutton. And now he's back at Bromley. So he's sort of a name to look out for on the team sheet coming up against his former team. But boys, another podcast in the books. AJ, sponsor, what they called?
Oh, cool. We're going to have to do this
the whole time, aren't we?
No. Okay. Molecular. Yeah. Manufacture, cleaning products, automotive, agricultural, commercial industries. This is going to be top of the range stuff. Really, really good. Really like from what I've seen from their website so far. Based out in Leiston. So local business. That's www.molecular-uk.com. Go purchase their stuff. Find out more information on that website. Yeah, best products and the best service, and you can rely on them. KOA10, that's full caps, KOA10 for 10% off all their products, and you put that in the coupon section when you check out.
It'd be a nice little touch, Ross, maybe, to you could get some gifts for all these people.
Yeah.
Dozens / hundreds of people that have given you lifts over the years. You could maybe gift them all with a little molecular cleaning product gift set, perhaps. Nice idea, yeah, so isn't
it? I'll chat with Molecular. No. Why is it so easy for you guys to say, but for me, I don't know. I think my brain just doesn't want to say it properly. Maybe it's just deliberately doing it. Stardust Spirits, easy, because they're obviously another sponsor, which is great to have Gary and the team on board, Stu. But yes, we'll be back, obviously, later in the week to bring you another pod to react to Bromley and also look ahead to Southampton, which will be a big game at Portman Road. Can't wait to be back there. But Stu, AJ, thanks for joining me. Of course, make sure to follow us on all our socials, Kings of Anglia, on all the bits and bobs we do, and follow our coverage. But if you're going to the game, enjoy it, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.